And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to the NBA Daily Ding here on the Athletic NBA Show. My name is Jared Weiss. I am joined by Mo Dekeel. And Mo, let's talk about the Clippers beating the San Antonio Spurs 106-92. How did the Clippers pull away in the fourth quarter?
You know, it was just a couple of runs there towards the fourth quarter that helped them kind of, actually towards the end of the third. And then anytime the Spurs started to make a run, somebody would make a shot for the Clippers. And then it really ended with Reggie Jackson hitting a couple of threes that sort of just put the game away, just out of reach of the Spurs at that point.
Fascinating stat line, 5-for-17 from three for Reggie Jackson. I don't know if I've ever seen that one from him.
It was pretty impressive. Like, he did let that thing fly today. Just so you guys know, Reggie Jackson took 17 threes. The whole San Antonio Spurs took 22.
Greg Popovich must be proud of that one. But, I mean, Paul George had a really good night. He had 34 points and 9 boards. He went 12-for-13 from the free throw line, which makes up for the 6 turnovers. But how important was his aggressiveness in this one?
I mean, really just went off, especially in the first half, where he really kind of put a stranglehold on the game in terms of it for the Clippers. It looked like he got a little bit gassed in the second half, but the Spurs just didn't have anybody to cover him, Jared. Like, it's tough. And PG at this level, the way he's playing and over these past few weeks, this is him as a number one option. And this is why people were like, yo, this dude's one of the best players in the league when he's this guy. And it's a pretty impressive performance across the board from him.
Is he making a dark horse MVP push with these kind of nights?
I mean, it's way too early, but yes. you know, it is way too early, because we've seen this from him. You know, that run in Oklahoma City where he was great in the first half of the season and then trailed off. Like, we tend to see that from him. That's why I'm like, yes, he's a dark horse candidate. If you're going to have a conversation about the MVP in the NBA, you have to include him. You have to include him, but it's still way too early, Jared, to even have these conversations.
Okay, how about a reasonable conversation? You had a tweet that I thought was really interesting where you showed Ivica Zubac's passing ability on the roll. And it was funny because I was thinking, wow, I guess the Clippers really have more playmakers on the floor than we realize. Then I look at the assist differential. It's 26 assists, just 16 assists. I was like, 26 for the Spurs, just 16 for the Clippers. So I guess, what are you seeing in the Clippers offense that's making it work that they could have so fewer assists than their opponent and still beat them pretty handily?
Again, I think a lot of it comes from Reggie Jackson and Paul George. Like, a lot of it's still really heavy one-on-one play. When the offense is at its best, it's humming. The ball's flying around the court here a little bit, like on that play with Zubac, where he just kind of rolled to the rim, and it's a pass that he wouldn't be able to have made 2 or 3 years ago. But it was, he didn't even stop, Jared. Is as he literally got the ball, kicks it straight to the corner. Coffey misses the three, but he gets the rebound and gets the dunk out of it. So that was like a nice stat padding offensive possession for him in that instance. But for the Clippers, like, a lot of their offense is still really ISO heavy, right? And it's Paul George kind of creating a lot of that stuff. It's Reggie Jackson. Like, there's nobody on that team that's a clear playmaker for others. Paul George has improved in that department, but it's not to the point where you feel like, yeah, they just got a guy where, like, he's just going to set everybody else up. And that's why they have games where they just don't have that many assists.
Okay, we got to show love to San Antonio real quick. DeJounte Murray, 26 points, 12 boards, 9 dimes, and 3 steals. Really, really good game for him. But my favorite play of the game was Derek White getting a loose ball, then doing a quick little spin pirouette right off the pickup to get it ahead to Murray, who finished a tough shot at the rim. The Spurs, I mean, they just don't have the wing scoring to complement those two guys playing well. But Murray and White, at least, were really fun to watch in this game.
Yeah, they were great tonight, you know, and when you're watching the way they're playing, I want to give the whole Spurs team credit, though, Jared, because they did continue to battle throughout the night. There was at least 4 different times throughout this game where I was like, oh, this game's about to be a blowout. And then the Spurs would come back, you know, and continue to fight through it and things like that. They're just a pesky team. And then you have Murray and White who can knock down shots, who can get hot and get going. It takes them a long way. But I got to tell you, Jared, I think you missed really my favorite play, which was Lonnie Walker driving down towards the end of the first quarter. And I don't remember who the defender is, but he reached for the ball and Walker just went behind the back, wrapped the ball behind his back in for a layup. And I was just like, okay, that was pretty fancy.
Dude, Lonnie, he breaks that thing out every once in a while. I mean, he's got 11 points a night so far this season. Like, he's showing something, but we don't see it quite enough.
Well, yeah, because you didn't see a lot of that. That was just one of two field goals he made today, off of 10 attempts.
Yeah, that's not good. All right, before we get to the Warriors-Nets game, can we talk about the worst news that's come out of the NBA in a while? And that is the Staples Center being renamed the Crypto.com Arena, according to Arsham Sarania. You live in L.A. You go to the Staples Center all the time. Are you going to continue to go there, or are you going to stop going out of protest for the terrible name change?
I'm going to continue to go. I'm just not going to call it the Crypto Center. I saw some people say we're going to call it the Crypt and all of that stuff. Nah, I'm just still going to call it Staples Center. And by the way, Staples Center wasn't a great name to begin with either. I remember making fun of it when I was a kid. Well, I was actually probably a teenager because it was 1999. But I remember making fun of it back then. So I'm just going to stay with calling it Staples Center, because as these places begin to change their names, Jared, I'm too old now to remember what's what. I'm just going to call it what I remember it as.
Hey, as long as you still call it the Sears Tower over in Chicago, I think we're straight.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, next up, we're going to bring on Anthony Slater, the Athletics Warriors writer, to talk about the Warriors' incredible 117-99 win in Brooklyn. Warriors had another unbelievable game. It seems like this is all they do now. We're joined by Anthony Slater from the Athletic. Slater, you're at the game, and you just watch another phenomenal defensive performance. How is this defense this good right now?
You know, I think one thing we underrated this offseason when, talking about them recorrecting their personnel. Mostly we talked about they got players who offensively know the system, know how to play with Steph Curry. Higher IQ was the word you heard. But we kind of underrated what that did to the defense, right? I mean, like, you know, IQ translates to the other side of the ball, where you know other teams' actions, you read scouting reports, you know personnel, and they're just like on a string from a team perspective, have been early in the season, currently have a 98.9 defensive rating, which, you know, if they were to stay under 100, which I don't think they are for the full season, but if they were, it would be the first team in, I think, six seasons to be under 100. But the one thing Steve Kerr talked about was he wanted to see them tested more individually, not just a team defense. And tonight, I thought they were really good individually. Draymond Green on Kevin Durant was the highlight matchup. And then I thought Wiggins on Harden was also a key.
Yeah, you know, Wiggins on Harden was the big one. Like, Harden, even when he did have those chances where he broke through, somebody was coming through to rotate. It feels like they really nailed the game plan on him.
Wiggins is, I think, undersold as a defender. You know, I mentioned the team setting, but sometimes he can be a space cadet off the ball. He can lose a rotation. He cannot box out. He can, you know, not get out to contest when he's supposed to fly out. But if you are just trying to drive on Andrew Wiggins, he's really good. He's laterally quick, bouncy. I think he was fourth among all wings in shot blocks last season. He actually got all defensive second team votes last year. And he's good against a guy like Harden, who's slow, methodical, is obviously trying to draw fouls, having a tougher time this season. Wiggins keeps his hands back. And I mean, you saw it tonight. Like, he kind of, you know, swallowed up a lot of Brooklyn's offense because of what he could do to Wiggins just on ball.
Then, of course, Draymond versus KD is just such a fun matchup to watch. And my favorite part was when Draymond buried that three over KD and he had the tongue out and everything. I mean, what was that matchup like up close?
Kevin's sitting there like, man, could you hit one of those threes when I was playing with you? But yeah, I think that was only like Draymond's fifth made three of the season. It was a good match. It's interesting. The Warriors typically, you know, like to use Draymond as a free safety. They don't love to get him locked in on like one-on-one battles because he is, you know, probably the league's greatest quarterback of the defense back there, essentially. But because of Brooklyn went super small, they had Patty Mills in the starting lineup alongside Harden, and the fact that Harden's out there, they need to use Wiggins, who is the guy they would normally put on a superstar wing. They have him guard Kawhi, LeBron, those kind of guys. They put Wiggins on Harden, which made Draymond take the Durant matchup, and it worked out really well. I mean, talk about a guy who knows all of Durant's moves. You know, there's clips I put in my story postgame, but where he's kind of calling out Brooklyn's action. He's telling Steph, like, hey, Patty Mills is coming to screen me, and I don't want to switch. And then he's getting there. He's getting a strong contest. He did it mostly without fouling. Durant goes 6 of 19, which, you know, a lot of stars have 6 of 19 shooting nights, and it shouldn't surprise. But when Durant has a 6 of 19 shooting night, it's like that's, you know, kind of an eye-opener. And they go 38-15 in the third quarter, the Warriors did. And that is, you know, Durant went 0 of 8 in that quarter, and that's where they broke it open.
I mean, Steph Curry himself had more threes in the entire game than Durant had field goals. He went 9 for 14, 37 points in just under 30 minutes. We have trouble finding different ways to talk about Steph on the show because it's just unbelievable every night. So can you find something unique to say at this point?
Oh, geez. Good. How about this? He's playing really good defense. And you talk to people around the Warriors, they're like, he's better than he's ever been on that end. Like, he's really grown on that end. He's always been obviously a three-point sniper, but he's not a weak point on defense. I'd almost even say, if you judge him league-wide, he's like a plus defender at this point.
And watching him diving for loose balls when he's already got like 35 points, they're already way up there. I can't believe the energy and effort that he's playing with right now. Don't see that from a star. Last thing to go over here, after the game, we got updates on Klay Thompson and James Wiseman's health situation. Please fill us in.
So both were left back in the Bay Area. This is like a week-long, like four-game East Coast trip for the Warriors, but those two are not with them. They've left a couple coaches back there, Rick Celebrini, their trainer, and they're just bringing in like, you know, Klay Thompson's brother and a couple like amateur basketball players around the area to play 5-on-5. And the expectation was Wiseman and Klay would play 5-on-5 this week. But as of now, as of Monday, actually, Klay Thompson advanced to 5-on-5, full contact scrimmage, which is huge. It's the first time since the Achilles recovery, so it's a big milestone. But Wiseman has not yet advanced, which I'm not necessarily sure I'd call it a surprise, but, you know, Steve Kerr in his postgame comments referred to how, you know, Jaren Jackson and the delicate nature of recovering from a meniscus surgery and you know, how many times last year did we feel like Jaren Jackson was close and he didn't return for probably an extra month. So it's just interesting to note Wiseman still isn't in 5-on-5. But I would also say with Klay being there, Kerr made it a point to go, that doesn't mean he's going to be in an NBA game next week. He's probably at least still a month away as they really try to get his body back. You know, he hasn't played an NBA basketball game in almost now 900 days. So slow recovery times, but still important to know.
I didn't realize it was 900. That's insane. Well, he'll be in street clothes. Anthony Slater will be in street clothes, but he will always be performing when the Warriors are on. Thank you for joining us, Anthony.
Yep, no problem.
Okay, we're going to bring in Mo DeKeel for the most important part of the show. But before that, do not forget to subscribe to the Athletic NBA Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever other podcast source you use, or in the Athletic app. You can subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/ding. And say that word again for me two times, Mo.
Ding, ding.